was it Matthew? Save my hide, because I can't read that Spanish.
Okay.
First of all, let me just start the sermon, because it's on the subject. We'll get to it, and I'm sure you pick up on it right here. I'm going to be reading, of course, from the Scriptures today, and I'll also be reading from various other sources, but this is the most authoritative source that I have for the sermon today, so we'll start right at the top. It's called Cowboy Wisdom from Texas, from Dix Bender. Good judgment comes from experience, and a lot of that comes from bad judgment. So hopefully if you learn from your mistakes. So it seems like the older we are, the more we learn that truth. Well, as you know, today is the Day of Atonement. And if I was to ask you the question, what is the cause of sin? You would say, Satan. I'm hoping you would have two choices. Oh, never mind. So you'd say Satan, and you'd be right. The cause of sin is Satan, and you'd be right. But why is that true? That's the question I'd like to ask today, and we address today. Why is it true that Satan is the cause of sin? What is it about him that has made that statement true? Well, I'm going to read again here from page 38 of the Holy Day booklet, which I'm... give me a second here. I have it marked in my other one. If I'm going to take it in context, we've already seen through the symbolism involved in the Passover that Christ's shed blood atones for our past sins. In fact, atonement means reconciliation. The Day of Atonement symbolizes the reconciliation of God and all humanity. If we are reconciled to God through Christ's sacrifice, why do we need another holy day to teach us about reconciliation? So we'll be addressing that as it ties in with what we'll be talking about in the title of the sermon today. If we're already reconciled, why do we need to fast as commanded on the Day of Atonement? And let's go now to Leviticus, the 23rd chapter now. Leviticus, the 23rd chapter. Leviticus 23, and we're going to start in verse 27. Also on the 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. Again, obviously we don't do animal sacrifices, but we make a sacrifice of ourselves, Romans 12:1. And we offer ourselves as a living sacrifice, and we're here to, and we also made an offering in a financial way, so we fulfill that obligation. And you shall do no work on that day for the Day of Atonement to make atonement for you before the Lord your God. Now, again, just move on down here to verse 31, and you shall do no matter of work. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all your dwellings. It shall be to you a Sabbath of solemn rest. And that's pretty... Today is, like we said in the offertory message, it's obviously a celebration, it's a time to celebrate, but in a very different way than we do in the other holy days, because our bodies are weakened today. And there's a good reason for that. We'll talk about that as we go through here today. There's a reason for that. We afflict our souls. We fast on the 9th day of the month at evening from evening, and you shall celebrate your Sabbath. So we're here to celebrate the Sabbath. But in that spirit, then, we want to ask ourselves, why is it that Satan is the cause of sin? Why is it that and we know that he's going to be removed, and therefore it's going to be a big part of getting rid of that sin? But I want to talk about the root of Satan's problems. Let's go now to... go ahead and just start the slide then. Here we are on the Day of Atonement. I thought maybe there's a couple slides. I only have 10. I want you to know I went through withdrawals, not allowing myself to do more than 10. I think it's only 10. So let's go to Leviticus 26 and verse 19. Leviticus 26 and verse 19. Now, And I'm going to start in verse 18. This is the blessing and cursing part of it. Verse 18 says, "And if after all this you do not obey me, then I will punish you with seven times more for your sins." The punishment will continue ever more. "And I will break the pride of your power." Now, I have 26, verse 19, part A, because we'll look at part B a little bit later. "But I'll break the pride of your power." In the Hebrew, the word can mean pride. It can also mean arrogance, the arrogance of your power. And we've seen this process. We've been talking about it for many years in the church. The pride of our power, it really began, well, let's put it this way, it was at its apex at the end of World War II. Then just 5 short years later, we went to Korea and fought to a standstill there. And to this day, they're still just eye to eye, gun to gun. And you might say we didn't lose. It was a draw, but you didn't win. Vietnam, we lost. We lost that war. And that's just the first one, losing Vietnam by Major General Ira Hunt, who was a major general in that war. Do we have any guys who fought there in Vietnam? I know we have some guys in the service then. Okay. We never lost a battle, not one battle, but we lost the war. And the other book over here, How We Won the War, written by a general of the North Vietnamese regular armed forces. And I saw his interview on, I think it was Discovery Channel. And some of you are too young to know this, others you'll remember. The Tet Offensive in 1968, there were thousands of Vietnamese, North Vietnamese, and Viet Cong who were infiltrated into the cities all throughout the South Vietnam. And on a given time, on a given day, they just erupted into battle. And it was a mess. And a friend of mine was there, and he said he was in a bar. And the next thing I knew, the MPs busted in the door and said, "Everybody back to your stations." And it was a terrible battle. They interviewed this Vietnamese general. And he said, "It was a terrible loss for us. They lost tens of thousands of men. It was a terrible bloodbath. We had heavy casualties too. Because it was street to street, room to room fighting. And that's the worst kind you can have." Anyway. But the general made a very interesting, the North Vietnamese general made a very interesting comment. He said, "We were prepared to go to the negotiation tables after that battle. We were so badly defeated. But we realized something we hadn't seen before, is that the anti-war movement back home would win it for us. All we had to do was keep fighting, and they would just keep throwing bodies out there." And exactly that's what happened. So, again, what happened was a mighty nation went in, and I don't get into politics, but there was here's this huge power, and it couldn't win a third world government. Of course, it had the Chinese and the Russians helping them, but we couldn't do it because we defeated ourselves. We defeated ourselves. All right, let's go to the next part here. This is part of the breaking of the arrogance of the pride. The next part of that verse, Leviticus 26:19, "I will make your heavens like iron and your earth like bronze." That's West Texas, I suppose, somewhere. And that's what we've been experiencing. That's what we've been experiencing. A drought is taking over the country. Now, the reason I'm saying this is the word pride. Pride. Israel's had a pride problem down from day one. They wouldn't obey God, and their pride, they had disobeyed God, and He'd bring them punishment. Brought them to repeated captivities. They would supposedly repent, He'd bring them back. Look at the time of the judges, you see that in microcosm there. And this would go on and on and on and on. But pride is a problem here. Pride is a problem. And God has to humble a proud nation, a proud individual, or whatever it may be. God has to do that. So we want to look at that subject here of pride. Pride. Now let's go to Ezekiel, the 28th chapter. Okay, go to the next slide. I think that's the one I want. Oh, he's not there. Okay. Ezekiel 28. I'm getting there. You know these verses, so I'm not going to say anything new, but I want to emphasize certain things to you with the concept of pride as the bottom line problem that Satan had. And that was really the, if you will, the motivating, I'm struggling for words here, the motivating force that got to Satan was his pride. Let's look at a few things. Chapter 28, verse 1. The word of the Lord came to me again. So Ezekiel's explaining his vision. Son of man, say to the prince of Tyre, thus says the Lord. And as you know, the first part is talking here about the physical prince of Tyre. And then there's a type and an antitype here. But you'll see here like the physical one. And this is clearly, you can see this in a lot of different leaders over the centuries. Because your heart is lifted up and you say, I am a god. I sit at the seats of gods. They have this, all this power. And in the ancient world, they really sat in the seats of gods for many times. In the midst of the seas and so forth. You see pride here. Talks about God as himself as God. Now, verse 11. Moreover, the word of the Lord came to me. Now we get more specifically into a spirit being with a type and antitype mentioned here. The son of man, take up a lamentation. Verse 12. The king of Tyre, and say to him, thus says the Lord, you were the seal of perfection. You were... If you wanted to know what perfection looked like in God's creation to that point, you would look at Lucifer. He was the sum. He was beautiful. He was very beautiful, and God made him that way. God made him that way. He's the one way of putting it, he was the perfection. He was the sum perfection of anything that God had made to that point. It was the sum perfection. So, let's keep that in mind as we move on. Now let's go ahead and read the rest of it. Full of wisdom. Lucifer was wise. If you had a question about how does God do something, he would give you wise, godly counsel. He would give you wise, godly counsel. Full of wisdom. God made him that way. Part of it is you see there, he was one of the covering cherubs. He was one of them. Probably Michael was the other one. Would sit in the throne room, in the third heaven, with God the Father and Jesus Christ, the one who became Jesus Christ. Right there. And God wanted that perfection around him. And that level of perfection in a created being. In a created being. So when you read here, we need to read it carefully. You were the seal of perfection. You were full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. He had a radiance to him that wasn't like exactly like God's, because God is perfect and eternal, but also all powerful, and you know, God is God. But he was radiant. He was so radiant. Very, very bright. Part of his name was Light Bringer. And yet pride changed all that. Pride changed all that, as we'll see. You were in the Eden, the garden of God. Now, this is like a parenthetical phrase, if you will, sort of help to identify who he's talking about. Who, and then we'll move on, because we'll see that in verse 16 describes something that has changed. But he's in the Garden of Eden. So he wasn't in the Garden of Eden in this perfect state. No, that was way before. But we'll come and show you that. This is sort of a little parenthetical phrase. Every precious stone was your covering, and then lists all these different stones. They're beautiful stones, sort of help reflect his beautiful countenance, his beautiful being. You know, they saw Christ in Revelation as being bright. And if you had that brightness generating from you, and Lucifer would have that as well. And then those beautiful stones sending out different lights in the prism of the light. This is kind of what it's showing us. Now, verse 14, you were anointed. See, you were the anointed cherub who covers. And there's that. He's one of the two there who covers. I established you. I built you up. You were on the holy mountain of God. You worked back. You walked back and forth in the midst of the fiery stones. All right there in the third heaven, and right there in the Holy of Holies area, at least right over it. And you were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created until iniquity was found in you. And that's how did that iniquity come? And we'll show you, it's pride. He became proud of his beauty.
Wasn't he beautiful?
Yeah.
But he forgot where it came from. He became proud of his abilities.
I'm talking on an empty stomach. Give me a little break. He was speaking about his ability. He was proud of his abilities. They're God-given abilities. Yet pride distorted him. And pride destroyed this once beautiful being. The bringer of life. Pride.
Now, why do I say that? Verse 16. By the abundance of your trading. Now, you can see where we could talk to about the physical king of Tyre, but also here, he was also a very productive being. You became filled with violence within. Why would he become filled with violence within? Grabbing on to what was his, and he would heaven help anybody who wanted it. See? Pride and now violence that begins to come in to protect what he has, because after all, didn't he earn it? Wasn't it his? Therefore I cast you profane out of the mountain of God. So that tells us why these events that you see here, when it says the seal of perfection, that was of course in the first part of verse 12, that was before the rebellion. Verse 13, he was in the Garden of Eden. Well, we know that was after the rebellion, after Satan's rebellion. And so it's not meant to be in a chronological order, but it is to show us the whole picture. And then we see in verse 16 that now he rebels, and now he's cast out. Now, if we read through some of the scriptures, and again, I'm not going to be definitive here because I don't think I can be, but it appears that at this point you had Lucifer in heaven, perfect in all his ways, without the pride. He covers over the mercy seat with God. He's perfect and beautiful, wise being. And then he gets put on earth. Now, this is Dumore 101, and you know, that and a cup of coffee is probably about all you can get out of it. Perhaps, and again, this is not church doctrine, so this is just me wondering. Perhaps God noticed he began to change a little bit. He said, go on back down to earth, and I want you to minister there. I don't know that, but maybe. Or another thought we've had over the years is maybe God said, I want you to go to the earth and take care of it and do what you're supposed to do. And then he got angry and bitter towards God. Who knows? But the point is, he got bitter, and the thing was pride. And the reason for that is, remember, we'll show you the scripture. Jesus says, I saw Satan fall from heaven as lightning. So he was on the earth at some point, decided, and you know, we don't have all these details. We just see it dimly. And then when he decided to rebel, he tried to go up to heaven to take over, and he was cast back down. And we know that something's going to happen like that in our time, in the future. But the point is, he was perfect in all his ways until iniquity, and that iniquity was triggered by pride. Pride about all that he was. He was wise. He was beautiful. He was all these things that we just talked about. He was that. But instead of saying, thank God that God made me this way and I'm able to serve God in this ability, instead he began to think of himself as or like God. And then he became bitter towards God. And the root of it was pride. And he says, I will therefore cast you out as a profane thing. And the word profane can even actually refer to a type of prostitution. Now, in spiritual sense, he prostituted himself, if you will. Out of the mountain God, and I destroyed you, or a bad translation there, as a covering angel. You were removed from that position is really what it means. In the midst of the fiery stones, your heart was lifted up. In the modern translation said prideful. Let me just read here chapter 28 and verse 17 from this modern translation. I'll start at verse 15. You were blameless in all. We'll start at verse 15. In all that you did from the day that you were created until the day evil was found in you. Your great wealth filled you with violence and you sinned.
So I banished you from the mountain of God. I expelled you, O mighty guardian, from your place among the stones of the fire. This is just their modern translation. Your heart was filled with pride. King James says the heart was lifted up. Your heart was filled with pride because of all of your beauty. He was beautiful. And he became vain by it. Someone who has a gift is a gift from God. It can either make them proud or it can humble them. Man, if I didn't have that gift from God, wow. Or we begin to think it's something that's innate in us, something we developed, something we've earned, and it's ours. Next part of this in the modern translation, you corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. So I threw you to the earth and exposed you to the curious gaze and the nations and so forth. The people are watching and they're learning from him. I don't want to go off on that tangent at this point. So, his problem was pride. And yet, if you were to ask him, and he would say, he had to honestly say, you say I got a pride problem. Am I not beautiful? Yeah. Am I not wise? Yeah. He might say you were. But am I not all these things? Yeah. Of course, you can't reason with this kind of mindset. And finally, because I am this way, I should be not the covering cherub, but I should be sitting at least with God, if not replace it. And we'll see this as we go through here. And it begins with pride. Let's go to Isaiah 14. Isaiah 14. We are fasting today because it reminds us whatever strengths we may have, they don't come from us. Whatever abilities we have, they don't come from us. We have nothing to be proud of. We have many things, as we heard in the offertory message, to be thankful for. But pride? Now, we can say we're proud of our children, and I think people know we mean that we're thankful to God. They've done this in their life. They've achieved that in their life. Yes. So we have to be careful, but I'm talking about this destructive kind. Now, we're now in Isaiah. And we're in Isaiah 14. Let's go quickly to verse 12. How you were fallen from heaven. Wow, what a fall. Now keep your finger there because I'm going to go now to Luke 10:18. Let's go to the next slide. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. I thought that's probably a good way. That's what he once was. This bringer of light, of the truth of God. That was his part of his mission. To share with the other created beings God's way. In that case, it'd be other angels. And yet he became prideful. And what did he do? Contaminated them. Think about the leavening process that we know about in spring holy days. Contaminated one third of them. And they are prideful. And now this is hardly what is. And the Hebrew is kind of reading, wow, what a fall you have taken. It's an enormous fall from heaven. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Should be Luke, if I remember right. Yeah, Luke 10:18. I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. And that's when he was cast back down. It's as if Jesus was... He did. He said he saw this. I kind of like that. So, they came back. And it appears as at that time, what was once perhaps a beautiful world, as it says in the first chapter of Genesis, became tohu and bohu, became confusion and chaos, and everything was just turned inside out. And then we come on the scene in Genesis where the Spirit of God hovers over the waters. There was darkness upon the face, you know, and there wasn't any light or anything because, if you will, just using some of our modern terms, and calling it like a nuclear winter or something had taken place. It wasn't really a nuclear winter, but it's a way of describing it. And then you see God renewing and refreshing the earth and renewing it from in Genesis there. But as a result of Satan's rebellion, which has stemmed from pride, stems from pride. Now, let's go to Matthew 24:29. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. See, in Isaiah, I lied to you. I didn't lie to you. Isaiah we're still in Isaiah 14, verse 12. How you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you cut down to the ground. Boy, what a fall you've taken. The old phrase saying, you know, the mighty have fallen. You who weakened the nations. Of course, that's happened over the centuries, isn't it? For you have said in your heart, see, in his mind, in his emotional state, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God, above all the other angels. And I will also sit on the mount of the congregation, on the furthest sides of the north. He's going to sit on the throne room with God. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Pride. But was he not brilliant? Was he not talented? Yeah. And yet, pride got in there and it twisted it all. And it isn't interesting that when he became that, his not only did his name change to the deceiver, the adversary, he is now prefers darkness to light. This incredibly wicked, twisted way of thinking and enjoys death and suffering. You know, you look at, think about concentration camps during the Second World War. That was just like a big party to demons. And people were being butchered by dogs and they loved it. They enjoyed it. See, that's the kind of mindset they are in. They were once wonderful beings that God created. And now they're just these sick, tormented, evil creatures.
Creations, I guess is a better word.
He said, I will sit like the Most High, yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to death or destruction, to the lowest depths of the pit. Those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, is this the man who made the earth and trembled and shook the nations? This is really, in an oblique way, referring to the man of sin and the beast power all kind of combined together. When that system begins to crumble, they're going to say, Is this the guys who controlled the world and took over the world? Look what's happening to them. And again, I don't have time to get into all that. But just some interesting phrases. Let's go to 2 Thessalonians real quickly, and we'll kind of cover that real quickly. 2 Thessalonians. And I'm going to begin in verse 4. Well, verse 3, I'm sorry. Let no one deceive you by any means, for that day will not come unless the falling away come first. The man of sin is revealed, the son of destruction. So another type and anti-type here. Who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshipped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Making that claim. Doesn't that sound familiar? The same attitude? So whoever this person will be one of great pride and arrogance. Do you not remember that when I was with you, I told you these things? This isn't new, Paul is saying to them. I told you these, and you're forgetting it. Because they thought that they'd been listening to people say the second coming had already occurred. Verse 7, for the mystery of lawlessness is already at work. Only he who now restrains will do so until he's taken out of the way. And then the lawless one will be revealed, whom the Lord will consume with the breath of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. So that's the time frame. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders. And under that will come, of course, the pride and the arrogance. The arrogance that Satan has, he will explain, exude through the person that he's talking about here. And then ultimately, the Babylonian system will be destroyed. Satan's problem was pride. Let's go back to Leviticus 26, 19. Leviticus 26. I have the easy job. You have the hard one. Staying focused on an empty stomach. I know that's hard. But you will be shocked with an electric shocker, cow prod. Never mind. No, they won't. I was just saying that. If you're on the internet, we really don't do that. Leviticus 26, 19. Oh, I'm in Numbers, so that's why that doesn't look right. There we go. Leviticus 26 and 19. I will break again the arrogance of your power. You see, Satan is behind the nations. All nations, even our own, have that arrogance. Nations are gathering right now. And, you know, Putin's trying to outsmart Mr. Obama, and Obama's trying to outsmart him. And the real terror of this is just one mistake. Somebody miscalculates. Somebody pushes a button prematurely. You know, what is it, an old movie called the Bedford Incident, I think it is. But anyway, you know, things could get out of hand. And all of this is driven by pride. National pride. We're going to, you know, and we all love our country. That's right. But there has to be balance in these issues, especially for Christians. Especially for Christians. Pride is what drives these things. But the word pride there is from the Greek word, I'm sorry, the Hebrew word 1347. It means arrogance, excellence. It can mean majesty. It can mean pride or pomp or swelling. So I know I've gone fast. Let's go to Proverbs 8. This thing of pride. And today is on an empty stomach. Hopefully it's easier for us to hear. You know, do I have pride in my life? Every one of us, I know I do. So, you know, I'll confess that. So I have to think about that all the time. Do you? Do you have pride? Has God given you a gift and a talent and it goes to your head? Or does it humble you and say, God has given me a talent or a gift or whatever it may be, and I really want to make sure I administer that talent correctly. See? I'm looking over here at Cecily. She doesn't have pride. I don't know that I know of. But she's an artist. I ain't no artist. I can't even draw a circle right. All right? But she can let that go to her head. I'm sorry to point you out. But she can let that go to her head. And she could just really be pompous and proud, you know, because she produces beautiful art. Or be thankful and appreciative and ask God for more of that gift as He sees fit to share it with you. And you can do that with any of the gifts. So, you know, it's up to us how we do these things. Proverbs 8 and verse 12. I, wisdom, and this is a poetic way, as if wisdom was a person and could talk to us. This is how it was written. I, wisdom, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge and discretion. A wise person, you see, has prudence. Prudence. And again, I'll go to a modern translation. Sometimes these things may help us. But let's just go ahead and read the rest of that. See if I can do two things at once. Okay, Proverbs. Let's just read it here, the rest of it in King James. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Well, see, Satan lost the fear or the awe or the respect of the Lord. He lost that. Pride and arrogance in the evil way. God hates all those things. Satan loves it. He loves that. And a perverse mouth I hate. You think he's got a perverse mouth, Satan? Of course he does. Now, let's just read it from this modern translation here. Start in verse 12. I, wisdom, live together with good judgment. See? Someone who's wise has good judgment. They know when to speak and when not to speak. We all make mistakes and we misspeak. I'm sure you've done that where it came out of your mouth and you just wish you'd go back and grab that dude and put it right back in. See? But you can't. But as you grow in knowledge, wisdom, live together with good judgment. I know where to discover knowledge and discernment. All who fear the Lord will hate evil. That is why I hate pride, arrogance, corruption, and perverse speech. Good advice and success belong to me. Insight and strength are mine. That's what wisdom will give us. Insight and strength. Because of me, kings reign.
Well, at least a few of the, not very many in Israel anyway, didn't do this. But those who did, they reigned with just laws and so forth. If you're a wise king, a wise husband, a wise mother, a wise employee, employer kind of thing. But it's there. You see, God hates that perverse mind, that arrogance and the pride. Because that's what got Satan, was pride. With the gifts that he was given. Now, chapter 11, same book, Proverbs 11, and verse 1. Dishonest scales are an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. In other words, don't cheat each other. When pride comes, then comes shame, and in some cases it says contention or division. But with the humble is wisdom. When pride comes, then comes shame. But with the humble is wisdom. And again, from this modern translation, chapter 11. Pride leads to disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom. That's another way of saying that. Humility. Humility. Chapter 16, verse 18. Same book, chapter 16. Verse 18. Pride goes before destruction. We've all heard that. And a haughty spirit, a prideful spirit, is really what it means. Before of destruction. It's a way of saying sort of an A and B part to that verse. And we read the Proverbs, it's usually that sort of reflective. It says this is this, then that is this kind of deal. Pride goes before destruction, and pride, a prideful spirit, before destruction or a fall. But to be a humble spirit better to be a humble spirit with the lowly than to divide the spoil with the proud. It's better to be humble. Now, false humility is, I'm humble and I'm proud of it. That's the false humility. We talked about that in the last sermon. Chapter 29. And verse 23. A man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. See what happened to Satan? His pride brought him low, and he didn't retain his honor. With all that he had, he let what God gave him go to his head. Let's go to Ezekiel 28 again. And again, allow me to read from the modern translation, because we have read from the King James. Again, sometimes just hear a little different phraseology, and you have your King James there to check me out. Ezekiel 28, verse 1 and 2. Ezekiel 28, verse 1. This, then, is the message that came to me from the Lord. Son of man, give the prince of Tyre this message from the sovereign Lord. In your great pride, you claim, I am a god. This is talking about the physical man came up with that. And that's not, you know, the pharaohs, even the emperor of Japan into the 1940s believed they were the descendants of the sun god. And the arrogance that stemmed from that. Now let's just read a little bit more. I sit on a divine throne in the heart of the sea, put himself up as a deity, but you are only a man and not a god. That's what God is saying. Though you boast that you are like a god, you regard yourself as wiser than Daniel and think no secret is hidden from you. With your wisdom and understanding, you have amassed great wealth, gold and silver for your treasuries. And when that is happening, they think, see how wise I am? It's working. It's working. Therefore, the pride builds up even more. Yes, your wisdom has made you very rich, and your riches have made you very proud. I keep looking for water. Now, verse 11, for time's sake. Then this further message came to me from the Lord. Son of man, weep for the king of Tyre. Give him this message from the sovereign Lord. You were, past tense, the perfection of wisdom, the sum total of it. If you want to see what it was, you can look at Lucifer. You were the sum perfection of wisdom, and you have been in the Garden of Eden. Even then, it lists all these stones. And your pipes were prepared for you in the day that you were created. You could beautifully sing. Apparently, that's referring to singing and music. So what's perverted today more than anything? I guess I can't say more than anything. I was getting gas yesterday in the car, and this gal drove up in the pickup in this screeching, sound like a cat getting gutted, along with music playing with it. I guess it was music. It was noise. And it was mad. It was angry, nasty stuff. And thankfully, she turned it off, put gas in her car. Though you were the anointed, verse 14, you were the anointed cherub that covers, and I have set you so. See, I set you there. I have set you there. You were upon the holy mountain of God. Again, God put him there. You have walked up and down the midst of the fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day that you were created till iniquity was found in you. By the multitude of your merchandise. And they, see, he began to, in the spiritual world, gather other beings around him. He gathered authority over them and power over them. And they willingly gave it over to, so they could be a part of it with him. By the multitude of your merchandise, they have filled the midst of you with violence. This is mine, and no one's taken it from me. He knew he was heading for a conflict with God. That you have sinned. Therefore, I cast you as a profane thing out of the mountain of God, and will destroy you, O covering cherub, in the midst of the stones of fire. And I will remove you, in other words. Now, let's move on down here. Verse 15, you were blameless. I'm going to read this now again from the modern version. You were blameless in all that you did in the day that you were... until the day you were created and evil... let me read it again. You were blameless in all that you did from the day you were created until the day evil was found in you. Your great wealth filled you with violence, and you sinned, so I banished you from the mountain of God. I expelled you, O mighty guardian, from the place where among the stones of fire. Your heart was filled with pride because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor. There's just so much there for us. Let's take a look at another area, just real quickly. 1 Timothy 3. Oop, wrong chapter. There we go. This is talking about anybody here. And we've seen... people go bad on this area in the ministry. There'd be blood about it. An elder, it says bishop, and an elder then must be blameless, a husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, and so forth. Not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money. See, all these things is what happened to Lucifer, and he became Satan, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. And then we move down here. One who rules his household well, verse 4, having his children in submission and all reverence, for a man does not know how to rule his own house, how to take care of the church of God, not a novice, lest he be puffed up. This is the part I want to really look at here, verse 6. Not a novice, lest he being puffed up with pride. There it is again. He fall into the same condemnation as the devil. So that's why I say pride is Satan's Achilles heel. Tendon, whatever they call it. And it is, again, pride. Now, I think it'll be all right. I've known in the pastors. I won't get into that. So, anyway, so pride here, again, is part of it. Be careful with pride. There's been times when people who've been ordained have just kind of this way, and then they get ordained, and boom, they're tyrants. And you go, what happened? Something just—I don't know—it just didn't work, and they had to be removed. And if you've been in the church a long time, you may have seen some of those tyrants. Anyway, now But that hopefully is in the past, and we don't have to fool with that. I really do believe we're growing as a people, as a church, and maturing in that area. But sometimes that happens. You just get surprised. And one person I'm thinking of, you don't know anybody, is a long, long way in a galaxy far, far away. God ordained, just became a tyrant, and removed him from his office. He's just fine. He still serves and does stuff, but something happened. I don't know. Anyway, page 39. Well, I don't even know where I'm at because I didn't mark it. Okay, the Day of Atonement involves not only forgiveness of sin, it pictures the removal of the primary cause of sin, Satan and his demons. And we've talked about what caused Satan to go bad was his pride. Until God removes the original instigator of sin, mankind will simply continue to fall back into disobedience and suffering. Although our human nature has a part to play in our sins, Satan the devil bears great responsibility for influencing mankind to disobey God. And we see that. Okay, let's go to the next slide. The Day of Atonement really is about Satan's judgment, isn't it? It's about his judgment. That's why he hates this day. And like he hates Passover and all the other holy days, but this is about his judgment. And you've, of course, very much aware of these verses here. The high priest, they would bring two goats. And since time is pressing here, you have the two goats. One would be the Azazel goat. The other would be for the people here. And then you have the high priest would go in on this day, once a year, and would make atonement for the people to reconcile them back to God for their sins. And I think, I don't remember what sermon it was here lately I heard, and I've heard it before and read it before, that we tie a rope, a real pretty rope, around the high priest's ankle in case he would go in there and he wasn't blameless as he should be and God killed him. Or if he had a heart attack, some of the problems while he was in there, no one else could go in there, so they would just pull his carcass out. And that's that. They had that set up that way. You come in through a secret panel area, and then if he didn't, they had little bells on the end of his garments. And if they quit hearing that ring for a long period of time, they go, "Uh-oh, something's not good." And it happened a few times. It happened a few times. So anyway, this is the day of his judgment. Let's go to the next one. Wasn't that pretty snazzy? That little, I'm getting good at that. So is there a scapegoat? He'd lay hands on that scapegoat. And again, this would represent Satan having the responsibility for the sins. And we have our part, we know that. We read that in the book. And then a strong man would lead the goat out into the wilderness. Now, they started by tradition tying a red, like a scarlet rope or not a thread or rope. Anyways. I hear cloth. We'll go for cloth. Okay. Can't think of the word. They tie it around him because these goats started wandering in off the desert back into the community. And people go, "Ooh, that's the Azazel goat." And they kind of get spooked. They want to run it off. And then eventually they would die. So anyway, this is picturing here Satan being removed and put into a condition of restraint, which would lead up to another holy day as we know. Okay, let's go to the next one. So let's remember the meaning of the Day of Atonement and not fall prey to the father of lies. John 8:44. Jesus says, "You belong to your father," talking to the Pharisees and Sadducees, "your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires." Were they not, you see it in Matthew 23, prideful, arrogant people? And when you make them religious, that's the worst combination. I don't care what religion, it's the worst combination. He was a murderer from the beginning when he rebelled, not holding to the truth. So what did Lucifer murdered the truth? See? He murdered the character of a lot of the angels. You know, he caved in, a third of them. Not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his own native language, it says in the NIV. For he's a liar and the father of lies. And today pictures the judgment upon the father of lies, in that all that he's been attempting to do will ultimately fail.
Let's go to the next one.
The Day of Atonement serves as a reminder of the next milestone of God's Holy Day plan. Beautifully depicted, it says here, I quoted from the book, the Feast of Tabernacles.
So at that, we'll look forward to seeing you after the feast. And if we see you at the feast, I hope you have a wonderful, inspiring, and uplifting feast. And realize that today is the day to remember that this is the judgment day that comes along Satan. And we want to guard ourselves against that leavening of pride. And always be humble by whatever God has given us and blessed us with. All right, look forward to seeing you soon.